Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So one of the Fox News hosts, you know, I'm not going to say his name. Everyone knows he's the goofy one who used to wear the bow ties. He was taken at Trump for not being more violent. Because, you know, with the big photo op of him walking to the church that nobody wanted him to attend, they used tear gas and rubber bullets and flash grenades and all kind of stuff to disperse anyone who was standing anywhere near the path. The little bow tie guy said that he thought the commander in chief was being too lenient in stopping the animals. Let that sink in for a second. Where a good portion of the country gets their news and their information, to call the people in the streets protesting against police brutality, to call them animals. I'm not sure if that's dog whistle or if that's just screaming into a bullhorn. And here to share some thoughts on where things are, especially in the city of Philadelphia, I've asked Richard Hooker to come talk with us. Richard is the secretary treasurer of Teamsters Local 623 there in the city. Richard, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to get your thoughts. I guess, according to this bow-tied Fox guy, animals, those people in the street, animals.
Oh, I tell you, you know, when you make that kind of statement, you just perpetuate what people are already feeling. You know, we already feel, the black community feel as though that, you know, we don't have any value. And then you just call us names and, you know, just attack us like that. You know, it just makes what we're going through right now is just much more unbearable to deal with.
Here's the thing, and you know, the argument back would be, well, there were probably white people there, and they're animals too, Richard. We were just talking about black animals. We're talking about those white animals too.
Yeah, but you and I both know that when that word is used, they're not talking about the larger community. They're talking about minorities and black and brown people. They're not talking about white people. When they say animals and thugs, and they're not talking about white people. They're not talking about white people. Everybody knows that.
You know, in Philadelphia, I've seen images of, you know, days of very peaceful protests, days of people in the streets marching and chanting and all that. And then the nights, things get crazy. Or have gotten crazy. Thoughts?
Right. Well, like you said, in the daytime, you know, everything is peaceful. Everything is done the right way. You know, there's kneeling on both sides. You know, you got the police. They come out and support, and, you know, the protest, everything is peaceful. But then once the night happens, that's when it turns ugly. That's when we, you know, they take advantage of what's going on. I mean, now it's more about what they can get, the riot and the looting, and now making about the real issue here. And that's just, you know, police brutality, black and brown people, and, you know, how this keeps happening. You know, we just had a couple months ago with Aubrey, you know, and then this happens. It just keeps happening over and over again. But when we, you know, as a community, we go out and we riot, we loot, and we, you damage our own, you know, I want to say our own, but we damage where we shop at, and we just destroy what our family needs in our communities. It makes what everybody is saying about us look like it's true. They call us animals.
But, you know, some of the people that I've talked to, you know, there's some element at play here as well. You know, there's always the agent provocateur. You know, we've seen already, you know, very questionable people doing questionable things. And, you know, how much of it is, you know, a couple of knuckleheads, you know, causing grief, wanting trouble? And how much of this is maybe a coordinated effort to change the message and to change the narrative?
You know, that's you make valid points. I mean, how much is it? I mean, I guess it starts off good, and then it goes into this downward spiral turn, and it makes the whole thing looks bad, you know, like you just said earlier. It started off very, very peaceful. Everything was done correctly. Everything was done right. And then these riots happen, the looting happens. We just had, not, you know, and then even for the company that I represent, the workers there, UPS, I mean, we have protesters taking merchandise off the vehicles and all these types of things. That should happen because it takes away from what we are really trying to get and what we're trying to achieve and what we're fighting for. And it's equality, you know, and it's hard to focus on the equality and working together and being peaceful with each other when you have these types of things happen with the looting and robbing of the stores and the UPS trucks, the FedEx trucks, the Amazon trucks being looted. That's not how you fight for what you want. That's not the message that we need to send right now.
Right. And ultimately, as I said at the beginning, I don't condone it. And the majority of people in the movement condemn this behavior, correct?
Yes, they do. And I think George Floyd's brother, he actually came out and said that you're dishonoring his memory by doing these things. And he's 100% right. We're actually taking this moment and making a movement about looting and rioting. And we're taking away from what we're, like I said, what we're fighting for. We want to be seen as equals. We have every right as everybody else in this country. We do. But when we do things like this, you take that message and everything that is negative that is said about the Black community, you're making it, you know, you're making them look like they're right.
Right.
And, you know, this just has to end.
No, and I've probably received every one of those talking points, the right-wing talking points of, well, you know, Richard, you know, the Black community, you know, they commit, you know, more crimes, you know, more white people are killed. I'm sure you've seen all of the messaging that comes out, and there is some truth to the things that are being said.
It is, and that's one of the things that really concerns me because, like I said earlier, I don't believe that people see value in the Black community. And I don't think Black people see their own value. And when we don't show our value, then we give opportunity for other people to not see our value. That's why it was so easy for the officer to put his knee into Mr. Floyd's neck. That's why it was so easy for those gentlemen down in Georgia to jump off the back of the pickup and shoot Aubrey. That's why it was so easy for the Mike Browns and Trayvon Martins, because I think that, number one, they don't see value in Black people, and we don't see value in ourselves, and we portray that, and these are the results that we get. So I think what we need to do as a community is start valuing each other. Then once we do that, then, you know, we can get other people, other races, the larger community, to see value in us. But it starts at home first. We got to take care of our own. And then, you know, hopefully, you know, everybody else will see the value in Black people.
But ultimately,
right now, they people don't see it.
Right. But ultimately, doesn't that come back to economics? I mean, you know, I've said for years that I believe ultimately you give somebody a good job, you give somebody an opportunity at the future, allow them to live the American dream, and they're going to do the right thing.
I agree. I agree with that as well. And, you know, and unions play a big part in that as well. You know, we are here to fight for the working class people. And I know in the Teamsters Union, what I'm a part of, the majority of the members are Black and brown people. And, you know, if we could get more of those going to the community where that are impoverished and under these circumstances, being going there with a goal, with a mission in mind, organized around what you just talked about, our economic base and job creation and all these things, then you're right. You know, the people there will see value in themselves. But it's hard to see value, like you said, when you don't have the job, when your wages are low, when you don't have access to health care, and, you know, you have to struggle for everything that you get. And then you go out and you see what happens to George Floyd. All that accumulating to one thing is a big problem. In any moment, it can explode, like what we see right now.
No, you know, I look at, you know, there was a story today that Mark Zuckerberg, was holding a video call with a number of civil rights leaders. And one of the civil rights leader came after the call and basically said Zuckerberg just doesn't understand the issues and is not going to be able to solve any of the problems because he doesn't get it. I think that's a lot of the white community, that we don't know what the experience is, because I don't think a lot of people know someone like George Floyd. I don't think they know someone like Trayvon Martin or any of those folks. So it's hard to then identify with someone that you don't know.
I agree. And having these conversations like you and I think that will open up those avenues where we can find out about each other and come to a common goal and to a common vision of how can we all work together. For an example, and you bring a good point. A few days ago, the team just came out with a statement about what happened. And one of our members brought it to my attention, and it was a very good point. How, if you look at the leadership of the Teamsters, they make up, it's 28 positions on the General Executive Board. I think it's about 28 positions. But only one of them are African-American. So out of 28 positions, when your governing body is only has one African American, but when you look at the membership, it's basically about 60% or more minority. But when you look at the leadership, it doesn't reflect that. And that's a very good point. Even to what we're talking about now, is like you just said, it's hard to really have discussions with the Black community if you don't, know what they're going through, know what's happening in the community. But having these conversations and having people of color that maybe be in leadership in your organization, that will help as well, because it's going to be hard to break that ice when you don't have somebody that I guess from the Black community that can really relate to, especially younger people. Because I was talking to a member last night, and there's a different conversation. The older members, they talk about how it used to be growing up, how they had good leaders like Martin Luther King. But now for the younger generation, we don't have that leader where we can say, okay, let's look to this person. Let's follow their lead. Let's see what they can do. We don't have that right now for this generation. And so when I talk to members now, they all talk about, the older people talk about how they had Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, those type leaders. The younger generation doesn't have somebody like that right now that they can lean on.
So how do you get to that point? Is it that we're just a disjointed society? There's got to be a reason for the fact that there are no trusted voices. And I would argue there are very few trusted voices anywhere, let alone just the Black community.
Right, I agree. And I think what we have to do, number one, is keep having these conversations. But don't wait until something bad happens. We have to do this like now. Even after the George Floyd and after the verdict, we have to continue to have these discussions. And then we have to, especially amongst the Black community, we have to get together with each other, find those leaders, find the ones that, can articulate our message and, sit down and talk to the larger community, and let's come up with a plan. Just not just talk about it, but let's plan, let's have a vision, let's have action, and let's stick to it. Don't wait until, like I said, something bad happens, then we got to rehash it all over again. We need to have these conversations, more often. And because, like I said, it only takes something to really spark what is going on now, because it's going to happen again. Unfortunately, it's going to happen again. And if we don't have a plan in place, if we don't have the leadership in place, if we don't have a vision in place, then next time it's not just going to be Philadelphia burning or New York burning. It's going to be small town America burning. It's going to be the whole country. So we need to fix it now before it gets to that.
So let me ask you this, because, we hear a lot about, police being racist and, there's systematic racism in the police departments. You're in, a city that, has had some problems over the years.
Yeah.
Do you believe the entire law enforcement community, do you believe there's some systematic racism? And if so, how do you address that?
Of course, it is, you know, and that's not just here. It's every police force. There's going to be some type of racism. It just, I hate to say it, it just is a part of America down to its core, racism. I mean, and we hate to say it, but look how America was built. It was built off of racism and slaves and all these things. So that element is not going to go anywhere. But what we can do when it comes to the police is get the right people in place, you know, make sure that when it's time to vote, we go to the polls and vote like today. You know, we have to make sure that, you know, the people that we hire to protect our communities are, number one, they're credible, they know what they're doing, and we need to check them out. We just don't need to hire people because we think they're good. We need to make sure that they're the thorough background check on these people that we hire to police our communities. And we need to make sure that in these communities that need to be policed heavily, we need to make sure that they have people that look like them in those communities.
And I would argue have to be part of the community as well.
Yes, they have to be a part of that community. I can trust you more if I know you've been there. If you're coming from out of the town or you're coming from the suburbs, I'm not going to really trust you. But if you come from where I come from and I see you on a daily basis, we have conversation, then, you know, when things happen in my community, it's not going to be one of those things where I'm going to hold information because I'm afraid of snitching or whatever it is. I'm going to let you know what's going on.
Right.
But again, you know, we have to get those people in place. We have to make sure we go to the polls. We have to make sure that the sheriff and the police commissioner and the sergeant, the lieutenant, you know, are people that are of good character and a good integrity. You know, so we got to do our homework.
I'm with you. Last question I've got for you. One of the other frames that I've heard a lot, and I wanted to get your thoughts as a union leader, but also as a black man who has to live in America. We're being told by those on the right, and you have to give conservatives and libertarians credit. They never miss an opportunity to use a good crisis. That this is all about unions. This is all of those evil unions, and that's the reason all of this stuff happens is because these policemen are in unions.
Well, and that's a good question, because even I'm not in, you know, in the police union, but I do have to protect the member and the part of the police that have to protect their member. But you do have to have integrity when you do it. You have to have a moral compass with everything that you do. You may get, you know, some kickback from the members. Oh man, why did you do that? I mean, he was a union member. The company just going to do, but something like this, you have to stand on your morals and your integrity.
Right, but here's the thing, Richard, and this is where my mindset goes. Look, every worker deserves to have due process. Every worker deserves to have representation, but wrong is always wrong.
Yes.
So you know, there's this idea that if you're a union member, you can't be fired. No. If you do something wrong, you can be fired. You just have to go about due process.
The
you have
right
to give
way.
People due process.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, if you're wrong, you will be terminated or fired. But you do have the right to due process. And it's our job as union officials to make sure that that due process is done correctly, efficiently, and done precisely. That way, there won't be no ifs, ands, buts about it. If the company, so to speak, does their part and it comes to find out that you were wrong, then you have to suffer the consequence. I mean, it's just our job to make sure we do our part.
Yeah,
and they do the right thing and thorough investigation of all the facts. So yeah,
there's no rational person who's going to watch that video of that man with his knee on that man's neck and say that is anything but wrong and anything but criminal.
Yes.
So to me, the idea that this is the union's fault is ludicrous on so many levels.
No, I agree with you. This is not the union's fault at all.
Yeah.
He made that decision. Now he has to suffer the consequences. And, you know, and And rest in peace to our brother Greg Floyd and his family. We pray for him, his memory, his entire family. And just this country in general, that we can get beyond this and move forward. Everybody got to join together with this. Everybody. Everybody has to get on board and let's work toward ending this so it won't happen again.
There you go. Richard, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Richard Hooker, Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 623 there in Philadelphia. Appreciate the time. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.